So, good morning. So, the title of my talk, that's One Fine Suit. I've had quite a few people trying to guess what it's about, but I can guarantee you that you'd never guess it in a million years. So, obviously, from the title, it's about as clear as mud what it's about, really, isn't it? I do like to keep you all guessing. I mean, as you know, you might not know, I'm a very visual person, and that's how God speaks to me. And I find one of the easiest ways to speak to you guys is in experience or what God's been doing in my life. So that's quite a bit of what today's about. This is another talk that's been inspired by James Ryle, but as usual, with a few Jackie twists, perspectives and insights, and also sharing how I believe God has spoken to me, and hopefully he will do to you as well, throughout the time that I've been preparing this. So let's have a joke. Always got to have a joke. What did the... And Chris, don't answer. What did the maths book say to the history book? I've got problems. What did the history book say back? Give it time. We've all got problems. I'm talking about the sort of problems that life imprints on us. I think that's quite a good word. Life imprints stuff on us, doesn't it? And not always in a good way. I'm not talking about physically, but mentally and spiritually, the things that hold us back. I'm not sure, as the joke says, that time actually solves problems. We think it does, but in my experience, all that time does is it blurs the lines. They morph into something else that makes them less obvious, less problematic, less painful. They're sneaky. They creep up on you or in you. So we learn to live with them. We adapt our life and adjust our behaviour to accommodate them. They begin to define us. More often than not, our reactions are an insight to a problem. We find that certain things press our buttons. I have things that press my buttons. And a negative reaction spills out. Don't you ever get that sometimes when you think, well, what was that? Why did I react like that? Perhaps we even play the blame game. It's somebody else's fault. If they hadn't have done that or said this, then I wouldn't have reacted like that. So problems, for example, unforgiveness, anger, bitterness, low self-esteem, that's a doozy, isn't it? That's one that we all at some point carry around with us, if not still. Low self-worth. What about this one? Believing the opinions of others about us, about the world, maybe. Bullying. Negative thoughts. Life's experiences. I mean, I could go on and on, couldn't I? I'm sure I haven't encompassed them all, but... So what is the result of all this? Unresolved problems squash our potential. They keep us back. They hold us down. But potential is linked to purpose. Just let that one rest a bit. Potential is linked to purpose. The Bible says that God puts eternity in our hearts, doesn't it? But I believe that God also puts the desire for a sense of purpose in our hearts too. Isn't that not all that we would, that we would all love to live with that thought, that we have a sense of purpose? And the possibilities that that encompasses, wouldn't we? Do you? I've been challenged to the hilt over that one. Potential and purpose. So today's talk is about potential, but God's potential. I did borrow this quote from James Ryle. What is potential? Yogi Bear says it's this. Potential is what you ain't yet. A man goes into a tailor shop to have a custom-made suit. He chooses some fine Italian linen and is measured up and told to come back in 3 weeks and that it will cost him £4,000. When he goes back, he puts on the suit and stands in front of the mirror and he's shocked. I've probably got to stand to the side for this. When he looks in the mirror, his right trouser leg is 4 inches too long. The left one is 1 inch too short. And the sleeves of his jacket are the opposite. And the lapel just doesn't sit right. The tailor says to him, "What do you think?" And the guy says, "It's horrible. Look at it." The tailor said, I can see your dilemma, but let me show you this. If you tuck the sleeve up like that and bend over a bit, that leg's all right. And then just pull the sleeve up like this, that adjusts that. Bend over a little bit, there you see, that leg's all right. Just tuck your head over here like this and pull up the lapel. Shove this hand in the pocket and pull up the trouser leg. There you go, he says, "What do you think?" So the man stands there in front of the mirror and he looks and he goes, "Oh, yes. That's one fine suit." Thank you. The tailor says to him, "I knew you'd like it." So the man leaves the shop and he's walking down the street and two doctors pass him by. So he's walking down the street. And one doctor says to the other doctor, "What do you think's wrong with him?" And the other doctor looks at him, he said, "I don't know, but that's one fine suit." That suit had potential to be a fine suit. But instead of putting the things right that were wrong, plans were put in place to make it look good by man's hard work and effort to cover up the flaws. But it wasn't really fit for purpose, was it? It wasn't fulfilling its full potential or what it was originally designed for. Are you kind of beginning to see where I'm going with this? In life, we can end up spiritually walking around like this. But people sometimes look at us and go, "But that's one fine suit." Somebody said somewhere, I don't know, some philosopher or something said, be kind, for everyone you meet is fighting some great battle. Who of us is not fighting some sort of battle? Please don't put your hand up. I might have to come and punch you. If you think that you're not, I think you must be a saint. Life throws us Well, there's no easy way to put it, is there? Life throws us dung. I've had times when I've been walking around like this. Not literally, symbolically, you get my point. And it's hard work. Thank goodness that we have a God that can see our potential. And he'll nudge us, prompt us, and say, "Hey, Jackie, that is not one fine suit. Let's make a few adjustments. Let's get it sorted. Let's release its potential." I'd really like to get to the point when God looks at me and he says, "Jackie, you just got a few wrinkles there. We'll just sort the wrinkles. I don't need major surgery." God is the best tailor to sort out our suits. But then I'm also thankful to lie busting, because for me, it's been the best sewer. So, there's always places in the Bible, isn't there, where you can find the answer. So let's find the answer in the Bible about that one fine suit. So I want to talk to you about one particular man who had potential, but nobody saw it until Jesus stepped into his life. It's the story of the man with the withered hand. Not your obvious choice, is it? We find his story or his account in three of the Gospels. His story can be found in Matthew 12, verse 9 to 13, in Mark 3, verses 1 to 6, and Luke 6, verses 6 to 11. I'm going to take it from Luke because I just prefer it. So in Luke 6, verse 6 to 11, it reads like this. "Now it happened on another Sabbath also that he, Jesus, entered the synagogue and taught. And a man was there whose right hand was withered. So the scribes and the Pharisees watched him closely, whether he would heal on the Sabbath, that they might find an accusation against him. But he knew," Jesus knew their thoughts, "and said to the man with the withered hand, 'Arise and stand here.' And he arose and stood. Then Jesus said to them, 'I will ask you one thing. Is it lawful on the Sabbath to do good or to do evil, to save life or to destroy?' And when he had looked around at them all," could you imagine that? The eyes of the very man that could see into your soul. And they'd not said anything. So it says, "And when he had looked around at them all, he said to the man, 'Stretch out your hand.' And he did so, and his hand was restored as whole as the other. But they were filled with rage and discussed with one another what they might do to Jesus." Yeah, there it is. In Mark 3, verse 6, it says, "Then the Pharisees went out and immediately plotted with the Herodians against him." So that account says it was the scribes, the Pharisees, and the Herodians, and how they might destroy him. So one thing that you notice from this passage is that we're not told the man's name. Just his condition. I believe he and others in the Bible are unnamed because Jesus wants us to know and understand that he is us. If somebody is unnamed in the Bible, it's because it directly relates to you. It's your story. This is our story, which hopefully will become clear. This is a divine parable with so much hidden amongst it. We don't know this man's name, just his condition, and he would have been treated according to his condition. His hand was withered, some translations say shriveled or wasted away. Is that how you're feeling today? I'm going to look at these passages and use a bit of poetic license to expand on them, but nothing that I don't feel doesn't biblically line up. So let me explain what would have been going on back there. This man lived in a time and culture where any disfigurement was seen as a curse from God. So whether he was born with this or it was an accident later on in life, everybody would have been asking or looking at him and saying, what sin did he or his family commit? And probably would have avoided him accordingly in case it was catching. In case the curse was catching. If it was from birth, he would have grown up an outcast. Probably only siblings would have played with him. He would have been teased, avoided, relegated to lowly work if he could get work at all. He would have been labelled inadequate, defined by his condition, defined by the opinions of others. Let's say his name was John. Would he have been known by John? Can you imagine? You know John. Lives in the village. No. Yeah, you know John. John one hand. Stumpy John. Lefty. Or just plain Stumpy. You know. Oh, yeah, Stumpy. Yeah, I know who you mean. We get defined by the names that people can give us. When I was a child, there was a man up the road called the Tell-Off Man. You can probably guess why. But do you know, I never, ever knew his name. His attitude defined him. I don't know, do any of you watch Gavin and Stacey? Toby will. Oh, have you? Yeah, they have characters in there that they say, you know Pat, and they go, Pat, yeah, fat no more Pat, Japanese Margaret, big fat Sue, and no man Jan are some of the characters and the names that they give them. I've been quite challenged to see potential, not condition. Back to the man. What might he have done to appear normal? Perhaps he wore the sleeves of his tunic a bit longer than anybody else to cover his hand, to cover his impediment from those that didn't know. That's one fine suit. I would imagine that when he walked down the street, the houses were always on the right of him, so that you only ever saw the left silhouette. If he had to walk back the other way, he had to do a similar thing. I would imagine that he would avoid crowds. He'd avoid new people that he didn't know, avoid conversations. All the things to cover up his condition. Culturally, there are two very distinct roles for each hand. Did you know that? Which is why I think the fact that Luke mentions it in his account is very significant. The right hand would always be used for eating. No knives and forks back then. And still to this day, you see, it's a very acceptable way of eating. They'll just pick the food up with their right hand. It would be used for greeting, working, but basically all that was clean and righteous. The left hand was used for, well, there's no nice way to put it really, is it? Wiping his bottom. Your left hand was always used for that was unclean. That's why we shake hands with our right hand. That's how far it goes back. So the hands had two very distinctive roles. So I want to emphasize the significance here. This man was only able to extend that which was unclean. Culturally, that which had no power and no authority. Okay, so Jesus is in town. Maybe this man has heard that Jesus can heal. Maybe he's heard that he's at the synagogue. Maybe the Pharisees have used him and set him up to be there. I suspect, don't you though, that he came in late and kind of sidled in and hid at the back, sitting quietly so as not to draw attention to himself and potentially be thrown out. They wouldn't want anything unclean in their synagogue. The passage says that the scribes and Pharisees were watching Jesus, closely watching and wanting him to slip up. They were ticked with him. They wanted him to slip up so that they'd have something against him. But Jesus knows exactly what they're thinking. But he still chooses to focus on the man with the withered hand. "Stand up," he says to him. Oh boy. Can you imagine how this man was feeling? You know, Jesus points to him, "Stand up." All eyes would have turned around and been on him. The very situation he has tried to avoid all of his life. I bet he went red, don't you? I bet he could feel his heart beating faster in his chest at the stress of the whole situation. Then, Jesus, not being satisfied with getting him to stand up, says to him, "Step forward, come here." Oh my goodness, now he's got to step out forward. And as he moves towards where Jesus is pointing, in front of everyone, their eyes are burning into him. I bet his legs were like jelly. But he was obedient. Now he has to stand there with everyone watching him while Jesus challenges the scribes and the Pharisees about whether it's lawful on the Sabbath to do good or evil, to save life or to destroy. In other words, is it right to heal on the Sabbath? Jesus looks round at all of them, but none of them answer. In their minds, they're probably willing him to do so, willing him to do something wrong, because then they can go, "Ha! We've got you." But Jesus is trying to challenge them, to see that they've overcomplicated something that was meant to be so easy. They've overcomplicated it with thousands of rules and regulations and rules that even the scribes and the Pharisees can't agree on what is or isn't and what's right and what's wrong. But their hearts are turned to murder. So getting no answer, Jesus turns to the man with the withered hand and he says, "Stretch out your hand." In that moment, He had a choice. In that split second, will he stretch out his withered hand or will he stretch out his whole hand? Will he stretch out the right or will he stretch out the left? Jesus didn't stipulate. If he extends the withered hand, everyone will see. Everyone will know. No hiding it then anymore. But oh, the possibilities of what he could receive could be just awesome. Jesus didn't say to him, stretch out your hand and I'll heal it. Just stretch out your hand. If he stretches out his left, he may save face. Damage control, easier option. Maybe this man can heal my hand without even seeing it. Do you think Jesus would have healed his hand if he'd stretched out his left? I don't know. Just a thought. Probably not. Anyway, the passage says he stretches forth his withered hand and his hand was restored and as whole as the other. Woohoo! Jesus didn't even touch it. Jesus didn't even say anything. This man's act of obedience and faith restored and healed. I bet you could have heard a pin drop. Followed by gasps, then murmurs. Murmurs of amazement. I expect the man's just standing there. His mouth open, just staring at his hand. Oh my goodness, look at my hand. I can wiggle my hand. Look, it's not withered anymore. But oh boy, Jesus has done it now. The passage says that the scribes and Pharisees were filled with rage. Like I said in Mark, it says they immediately went off and plotted with the Herodians against Jesus. But let's be clear here. The scribes, the Pharisees, and the Herodians were not friends. They pretty much disagreed on everything. They looked upon each other with contempt, and each group felt that they were better than the other, that they'd got it right. But they were willing to overlook that so that they could conspire together, plotting Jesus' murder. This is the defining moment that takes Jesus to the cross, healing this man's hand. So I would imagine that that day you'd have two very different reactions and different groups of people. One that are filled with amazement, with awe and blessing. And the second, the religious people that are angry, indignant, and puffed up. Religious people always leave church angry. Do you know why? Because they came in angry. Do you guys have different seasons where God speaks to you the most? I mean, I do. And he seems to choose certain places at certain times for seasons and then moves on to something else and somewhere else, depending on what lessons I need. I've had seasons where he'd speak to me always in the shower, in the middle of the night, when I've been out walking the dog. I'm going through a different season at the moment where it's predominantly in the car. Can't imagine why. But what I did notice with all of them, it's always when there's nowhere to go. Nowhere to go, nowhere to hide. And probably when I'm quiet and shut up. Some of you will know that I have an aunt that has dementia. And she lives about a 2-hour car ride away from here. And at the moment, I'm regularly travelling up and down there to help look after her. I have to say it's generally a upsetting and stressful time being with her. So when it's time to travel home, I'd really like a quick journey. You know, because I'm thinking of my sofa and a decent cup of tea. I'd like a good journey without delays. But you can guarantee it that every time I get to the Shoreham flyover, through to Lancing and Worthing, the traffic is just queued and very slow. So I don't know if anybody else does this or whether I'm just the only weirdo, but when my car comes to a halt, I always look at the car that's in the lane next to me. John does it. Do you know why? Because I always want to see how quickly I'm moving in relation to where the other car stopped by the side of me. And sometimes you see my car will start sailing ahead and I can see that car in the rearview mirror. Ha! I'm moving faster. But then it gets deeply frustrating when that car seems to sort of like disappear into the distance and I'm like, no! So I change lanes because that one's moving faster. And then what happens? Yeah, it slows down. So then I change back again and the same thing happens again. So frustrating. Anyway, the other week, I'm getting somewhere with this. The other week I was travelling back and got into a traffic jam. I checked the next lane next to me and it was a B&Q van. So I thought, right, I've got my eye on you, matey. But then to begin with, my lane was crawling faster. That was a nice sense of satisfaction. I could see him in my rearview mirror, thank you. Then my lane slowed down. And yes, you've guessed it. Here comes Mr. B&Q man in his van, and now he's ahead of me and he's disappearing, which wouldn't have been quite so bad if I didn't have to read on his van, "You can do it if you B&Q it." So I'm in the car having a bit of a rant along the lines of, this is so unfair, I just want to get home. He's getting there faster than me. Why? And I clearly heard God say, what's it to do with you? If it's my will that his journey is quicker or slower, what's it to you? Stop judging. Oops. When I got home, do you know what I found out? That's in the Bible. It's in John 21, verse 22 to 23. When he says to Peter, what's it got to do with you? He said to me, your journey is your journey, and I will guide you. His journey is his journey, and nothing to do with you. So that was me told. But I tell you what, the pressure lifted. I could see that what was important was to be blessed on my journey, to enjoy my journey, not worry about his. I mean, both literally and spiritually. I need to be enjoying my journey. No comparisons. Do you know what the funny bit was? As we reached the traffic lights, where after the traffic lights it generally clears and everyone zooms off, who pulls up next to me? Mr. B&Q van. We'd both got there at the same time. My journeys are less tense now, which is good, praise the Lord. Anyway, back to the passages. Can you imagine the buzz as that man left or tried to leave the synagogue? Can I see? Show me your hand. Was it really withered? Can I touch it? Did it hurt? Did you feel anything? Will you touch me? Perhaps as time went by, word spread, and people would come to his village from far and wide just to see the miracle, just to touch the miracle. Can you tell me where I can find that man with the healed hand? Oh, you mean healed, John. Oh, yes, he's down by the river. You can't miss him. He'll be talking to quite a crowd. What a difference. But every time he touched anyone with that hand, I have to do it with my right hand, he was touching them with a miracle from God. We have that potential too. A touch from God can transform you into a carrier of blessing. I'm going to say that again. We have that potential too, because a touch from God can transform you into a carrier of blessing. I want to be a carrier of blessing. So let me tell you about another one of my mad car journeys back from my auntie. It had been a particularly rough day with her. Quite upsetting, quite stressful. In fact, so much so that I kind of got to the bottom of the road and almost felt like I needed to pull over, have a good cry and just carry on my journey. So being the good British person that I was, I said, you suck it up and carry on. But on this journey, there was a delay of a different kind. There was one lane closed on a short section of dual carriageway that led up to the traffic lights. And there were signs on the road saying, lane closes in 400 yards, lane closes in 300, in 200, in 100. So the cars, all of us, we were all being really good and we were all in the inside lane because the lane's closing. And just as I got up to where the lane stopped, the traffic lights went red and all of us had to stop. So I was literally poised just where the barriers were to where the lane stopped. And all of a sudden, this boy racer in his souped-up BMW came to a bit of a screeching halt by the side of me. I mean, not that I was judging or anything, you understand. I'd had a bad day. That's one fine suit, Jackie. He'd ignored the signs and sailed past this great long line of cars, only to be stopped right at the barrier. So now, here he is to the right of me, and I have to decide what to do. Do I let him in when the traffic starts moving? Or do I make him wait? It'd serve him right. If I look straight ahead, I can pretend I haven't seen him. I've had a rough day. As the traffic lights changed, I had seconds to decide. Do I hold out that which is healed and whole and blessed? Or do I move on with that which is withered? You can almost hear all the cars behind you going, don't you let him in, don't you let him in. We've been waiting here. Don't you let him get away with it. And in that split second, I literally held out my hand, giving him permission to go ahead of me. Ding, shiny halo. I'm telling you though, the look on that young lad's face, I'd expected, thanks, you pushover. That's why I do it, because I always get away with it. But do you know what? He didn't. He had this look on his face of, thank you so much. I know I've hacked those people off. I know I messed up. You've been so kind to let me through. It was a, you think, well, can I glean that much from a smile? Yes, I can. There was a genuine smile of thanks and appreciation on that guy's face. Potential. So as he pulled away, that wasn't quite what I'd expected. And I actually said it out loud. I went, oh, well, that wasn't what I expected. And I felt God say to me, I know, but you don't know what sort of a day he's had. He's had a bad day. Be kind, for everyone you meet is fighting some great battle. Don't get me wrong, I don't always get it right. But at that moment, it seemed worth it. That look on his face, it was worth it. There's a quote that says, happiness is amazing. It's so amazing that it doesn't matter if it's yours or not. So let's just briefly go back and look at the healed hand man. Imagine this. Sometime in the future, somebody says to him, did you hear what happened to the man that healed you? Did you hear what happened to Jesus? No. The Pharisees crucified him. He's dead. What for? He was crucified for healing your hand. Can you imagine being that guy? What did he do with that information? Did he hide his hand again? Did he feel guilt? Did he feel shame? Did he feel that it was all his fault? Or did he understand the power behind his healing and up his game? Did he spread the word, reach out and touch more people with the miracle of God? We don't know, because the Bible doesn't tell us. But I'd like to think that he went back to what Jesus had originally showed him. He stood up, he stepped forward, and he stretched out his hand. What would you do? Well, the thing is, this is us. This is you. Jesus healed that which was withered in us, sin, and died on the cross for it. Jesus paid such a price for my healing, for your healing. So what are you going to do with that information? Pull back in the hand? Go and hide? Or will you stretch out that which is healed in all of us? Or hide that which is withered? Step forward into your potential. Step forward into your purpose. Our purpose is to love one another. A touch from God can transform you into a carrier of blessing. Your life is a miracle. How great is that? Every person whose path you cross has the potential to be touched by the miracle of what God is doing or has done in you. But you have normally a split second to decide whether your bad day is their bad day or whether your healing is their healing, whether your blessing is their blessing, or whether your problem is their problem. We get to decide. The world teaches out there that if you've had a bad day, why should anybody else have a good day? The world out there teaches you, basically, do unto others before they do unto you. But that's not what we're being taught. We have a split second to decide. Potential, purpose, amazing. Did I feel any less of a person because I let that man in? No, in fact, it blessed the socks off of me. I was driving home the other day and I'd been shopping and I thought, do you know what, I'm going to treat myself to a big bunch of flowers, which I did. And on the trip home, God says to me, go and drop them round at so-and-so's. Mm-hmm. Yeah, thanks, God. I had a split second to decide. Did I carry on or did I turn off? When I got home, did I feel more bereft because I'd not got my bunch of flowers? No, I didn't. It was a great blessing to me. But like I say, don't think I'm extolling my virtues. I'm not. I don't always get it right. So what do you think? Shall we try it and see what God says and does? An action of faith and obedience, not to me, but to God. Do we feel that we want to stand up, step forward, and stretch out our hands? When you all leave here today, you are going to have to stand up and you are going to have to stretch forward. God always does things in increments, like, you know, the easy bit first, and then the middle bit's a bit harder, and then the next bit is harder still. So we all get to stand up, step forward. It's the bit afterwards that we get to choose whether we stretch out our hand. To bless others. To be a carrier of blessing. So I thought that you might want to stand up. If you want to step forward in my direction, I have some frankincense anointing oil to bless your outstretched hands. And what you do with them after that is between you and God. Sound good? Shall we stand? Standing up's the first part. If you want to step forward, that's up to you. You can can have your hand blessed if you want. But go out and be carriers of blessing. Amen.